Mm, tasty.
Yeah.
But not.
I'm sorry. Was that your Tinder description?
Right. Tasty, but not. Click to see more.
Yeah.
We're going, right?
Yeah, I'm recording. So if you want to start,
I am too.
Start rocking and rolling.
That was comedy gold right there. That's going to keep the kids coming back right there.
I think the kids left long ago.
That's right. It's Tuesday, April 4th. Man, this year is flying by.
Yeah. Isn't it? Well, yeah.
Flying by. It is April 4th. It is episode 258 of On Taking Pictures. Three more episodes, including this one, until the big, two more. Actually, because the third one will be okay.
Yeah, we got to figure out how we're doing that.
You know what? Maybe the big show should not be 260 because that actually ends 4 years. 261 begins five. So maybe you.
Oh, I see.
You're saying. You'll be back for 261.
So wait, why don't we do this? Why don't we do a regular show next week? We'll do a Q&A. We'll record before I leave.
Okay.
Put that up the
week
I'm away.
And then the big anniversary show will be 261.
Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense because that actually starts year. That's episode one of year five.
I was thinking about this whole postcard thing that we kind of played around with the idea before.
You like it, don't you?
I do like it. And what I think people can do, if you just go to CVS or wherever and get a 4x6 print made, turn it over, stick a stamp on it with an address. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just send them to us. And even if they get kind of messed up and mangled in the mail, that's half the fun.
I have an idea.
Okay.
I have an idea.
Oh, boy.
Wait, should we do the thing here? It's On Taking Pictures. It's we get so excited. It's Bill Wadman in Brooklyn. It's Jeffrey Sidorson, Silver Spring. It's episode 258. It's the best photographer. It's one of the best.
We were on the list.
Right. Resource Magazine. Yeah. Thank you, guys. What was it? 18? 16 or 18? 18 photography podcast you should be listening to in 2017.
Yeah.
OTP number five.
Number five, which begs the question, what are number one through four? Well,
irrelevant.
Candid Frame is one of them. So
no,
he's friend of the
not.
Show. So we
friend
we,
of the yeah.
We and, give him a solid up.
One of the hardest working guys you will ever meet.
Oh, yeah.
Zabario Next.
He's a machine. But yeah, we are number five, so that's very exciting. I don't know.
Yeah,
if
so thanks, guys.
Are they? Do you think that they are in some sort of order of? Do you think that they're ranked, or if is
no.
it just like, oh well, here's another one. Number five is
no.
this one.
Yeah, I don't think they're
okay.
ranked. I think it's.
I just wanted to throw that out there.
Here are. Yeah.
So to anybody who's listening to us because of that, hello, welcome.
They couldn't be ranked because This Week in Photo is number one.
Oh, wow.
What?
Zing.
Who said that?
Zing. You did, Jeffrey Sidoris. All right. So what were you saying before we were so rudely interrupted by the intro?
Okay. So, right. so rudely interrupted by starting the show. So I was looking at, there's a thing called Vogue postcards. And it's a box set of, there is a box set, and then there's a book of 100 iconic.
Ah, right, yeah.
Actually, I think this was what I was looking at. I'll put a link on Amazon. But it's a little. It looks like a little book, but inside are 100 of the postcards from Vogue magazine, and it looks like just a terrific little set. In fact, I'm just going to buy this right now, and I'll report back. But I was thinking, what if we did something like that where we did 100 or so postcards and did them in like a little set, and maybe there are, I don't know, maybe there are only 261 copies of it or something, you know, whatever it is, like some sort of number that is.
Well, you're going real deep in here. Okay.
Relevant,
keep going.
Right?
Okay. I like your vision.
And maybe like the first 50 or something, you and I can include I don't know, a little note that's signed, and maybe each of us include a print. You include a print of one of your photos, I'll include a print of one of my paintings, and it's like the first 50 or something. So it could be like a thing, like a, because 5 years is a big thing.
No,
right?
It is a big thing. But what you're talking about is a lot of work. I mean,
it is a lot of work.
We could do it. My view was have people send in these postcards.
I love
postcards.
The postcard things that you were saying. Yeah,
we,
I love
we shoot
that.
The postcards, and we just even create a website with all of the postcards we got sort of sitting on white.
That would be fun, too. That would be fun. Let's do a whole thing. We can get the digital files. We can have them printed. I'm hot on this.
Right.
I don't know.
I wonder if the only question is where do we send them? Because you and I don't have a PO box. We almost need we need somebody who can like gather all these things, who has like a work address we can send them all to.
I'm working on it. Okay. Maybe I'll just get a PO box.
It's a real,
they're not that much.
It's a real pain in the neck to get them in my neighborhood, so I would...
I bet. Yeah, I bet.
But if you, a little more out in the suburbs, can get one easily, why don't you do that, and then we can...
It's a lot easier than actually in D.C. proper, from what
right.
I'm finding.
All right, well, why don't you find out, and we'll have a definitive answer for next week, or in the group this week, you know what I mean?
In the near future.
Yeah.
Let's say in the near future.
And we'll get an address. And so, but in the meantime, everyone, pick a picture... Get it printed out, ready to go, like 4x6. I think you could just stick a regular stamp on the back corner.
And just, I don't know.
And I don't know why you couldn't. I mean, it's not like you're trying. I mean, you could probably even get away with a postcard stamp. But even if you don't, regular stamps should be fine.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway,
it'd be kind of cool. And for those of you who do want to kind of delve into postcards, there is an app for the iPhone. I'm not sure if it's Android. I wouldn't be surprised.
What's the app called?
Let me see. It is called Touch Note.
Touch Note. I'll put a link in the show notes. Send your photos as postcards and greeting cards.
Yeah. Okay. So it is iOS and it is Google Play. So both platforms, and it's terrific. I've used it several times. You can pull from your camera roll, and you can do either one large image. They've got a few different layouts. You can do multiple photos on the front, and then you write your little note to whomever you want to. You address it, and they send a physical postcard.
Oh, that's cute.
And the quality of them is terrific. If you want to, you know, start doing actual, I think it's $1.99 US. I'm not sure what it would be outside the US. So, but I think it's $1.99 per postcard, and that includes the postage.
Yeah, that's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
For our thing, I think half the fun is going to be seeing the back of them and the handwriting and a little note.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah. All right, we got a ton of stuff on the boards for today.
Yeah. Can I do one quick thing?
Sure, go ahead.
We were in California and the time just flew by. Didn't get a chance to see, do, or meet up with the people that we wanted
You're
to.
Like with anyone.
Right. So we are going back to California, Fielding and I, last week in July, I think is when the dates are.
All right.
So last week in July, Southern California, if anybody wants to hang out, meet up, grab a drink, grab a meal, whatever, shoot me an email or shoot me a message or whatever. And then this one's big. Last week in November, first week in December.
I saw this on the group.
Paris.
Yeah, Paris.
Yeah. We're going to Paris. So Fielding and I will be in Paris. If you are in Paris or around Paris at that time, again, end of November, beginning of December, shoot me a message. And if we can say hello, we'd love to do that.
Can I throw one on the pile?
Absolutely.
So I'm going to be in San Francisco starting next Wednesday, but the following Tuesday, which is the 18th, the wife will be working. And so I have that evening to myself, and I was thinking of trying to put together a little OTP dinner meetup in San Francisco. So
that would be cool.
That would be Tuesday the 18th, 2 weeks from today. If anybody is interested or has any ideas or lives there and might be good at organizing such thing because they know a good place to go that's not too expensive, that can handle a few people, you know, not like a ton of people, but like a handful of people, that would be great. So get in touch with me.
Are you going to get a chance to see Gary?
I am, yes.
Friend of the show,
that
Gary
is,
Yost?
That is the plan. I'm going to go see Gary Yost. I'm taking the picture of my fourth grade talented and gifted teacher. Yeah, my fourth grade tag teacher who I haven't seen in 25 years.
You should do a picture of Gary as well.
I plan to. Yeah, I plan to shoot Gary. I plan to shoot this teacher. I plan to shoot a number of people I'm in the process of getting a hold of out there.
What would be amazing is if you could shoot Gary on Mount Tam.
Yes. The issue like with Gary one of the fire is that Gary's a very busy man. I have shot Gary at the fire lookout before, but not for a project, so that could be fun. We're trying to coordinate our trips here because he's in and out of town and around then and busy. So we're going to make it work.
Cool.
So yeah, so send me a thing. I'll be there in a couple weeks. All right, so what do we got? What do we got on the pile here? We've got a lot of stuff.
We got a lot of stuff. There was some talk about artistic nudes in the group after
of Jeffrey.
Exactly. Yeesh. And they are fabulous. See, what I've done is I've recreated the I can't even do it.
No, keep going.
I've recreated the Burt Reynolds shot, the very famous
My god, I was planning on doing,
you were thinking about that.
Okay, you know the inside of the Thriller cover with Michael Jackson sort of same pose with the were they like tiger kittens or something
that,
right?
Yeah.
So my friend Amit has a little dog that he loves, and I was thinking like we should do like a weird Burt Reynolds nude version of it with like the cat covering.
Like a send up of that. Oh my god, that would be hysterical. Hysterical.
Yeah, we're gonna do it as one of the 365s, I think. So it's gonna be fun. Anyway, go ahead.
You should.
Okay, so nudes on the group.
nudes on the group. How somebody's, I forget who it was that said, but one of the reasons that photographs are of nudes walking away is because of the algorithms that sort of scan breasts, and you can't show breasts.
Google's shutting them down.
But apparently showing a bare ass is fine.
Well, that's so nudity in America, I guess.
right. And then I got to thinking about our discussion about color versus black and white. And I thought even within color, there are a few photographers that I follow who, while all of the work is in color, it feels some of the photographers, it feels like you're looking at Playboy, while others, it feels like you're looking at, you know, Penthouse or something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, do you think that that is the equivalent of looking at somebody's studio portrait and it feeling like glamour shots versus Vogue? Right? Is it the same kind of thing? Is it just a level of skill that is the differentiator?
I don't know if it's a level of if it's a technical difference or I will is say it an aesthetic difference or is
a
it
a lot
both?
Of those Playboy photographers were seriously like monster guys. I mean, those
absolutely
it is really hard to do that well because a lot of those surprisingly enough did not have that much retouching on them. They used makeup and all kinds of stuff, but it was just really good lighting and you know they had 16 lights and you know all kinds of crazy stuff. So I just want to throw that in there. But yeah, okay,
yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. I wonder what it is. And is it also one of the conversations that I'm hoping to have is upcoming is a photographer and a model that this photographer uses again and again and again, a muse, if you will.
Sure.
And we're going to talk, the three of us. So it will be myself, the photographer, and the muse. And to get all sides of that, like what are the expectations when she goes in? Is she trying to do something purposefully different than what he shoots with other people, or how does it come about? Is it organic? Is it planned? And it's just all of these things around, because nudity has so many different connotations and so many different expectations that I don't know. It just around this conversation, it got me thinking about it. I don't know where I'm going with it, other than to say I find it fascinating that these algorithms are picking and choosing, seemingly pretty ineffectively, of what to keep and what not to keep.
Yeah.
In terms of posting.
Well, I mean, they're just an algorithm after all. You know.
Right. Anyway, so what are your thoughts on artistic nudes? Are nudes, and this is another thing, do nudes start out artistic or do they start out sort of lascivious and they have to be made to be artistic?
No, actually, I think they start out very innocent and they diverge from there, right? Mm-hmm, I mean, a naked body is just a naked body. You know, there's, did you remember, and we always go back to this, but in The Genius of Photography, they show Sally Mann taking pictures of her husband. Is that right? Do you remember this? Like it was his back?
I think so, because he was, what is it? He has
he's some degenerative disease or something.
Is it MS?
Yeah, he had some sort of degenerative disease, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she shot this like photo of his back because of the way he like hunches over or something like that. I remember. But, you know, you look at that and it goes, okay, this is just a person, a nude person sitting in front of the camera. Like, beyond that, turning it into something that is artistic, where it has compositional and lighting and meaning and merit, versus it swishing into like sexy, which doesn't necessarily mean that it doesn't have merit. I don't want to imply that, because there's merit to that too, but pushing for that sort of side of things, I think that's a decision you make from the beginning. But I think a naked person sitting in front of a camera doesn't inherently have either of those things. I think both of those things need to be imbued upon it in the process. But I think,
is it valuable then for these online services to just have a blanket sort of, you know, nipples are not okay, but bare ass cheeks are fine?
I think it's the best you can do without getting into community standards, and then some place mm-hmm, in Alabama mm-hmm. gets to decide what the national community standard. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
You know, it's funny when I have taken nudes before. I think I said this last week, that I've never quite found a vision with nudes. I take pictures that I think are perfectly nice nudes, but I don't think they feel like my pictures, you know, and I haven't quite figured that out yet. But I also feel odd when making quote unquote sexy pictures. You know, I've taken mm-hmm. pictures that are sexy, but usually it's almost like a little tongue in cheek sexy, not actually trying to be sexy. And when I do, and I am not a prude, sexual prude in any way, I do feel like, oh, I don't want to be that photographer who makes the just, you know, the girl with her ass sticking out. Like, yeah, okay, it's been done. You can do it. I could do it. Like, this girl will do it. But, like, that's not what I – it feels not below me, but beneath my photographic ideals, you know? So, you know, it's also, I think there's a little bit of what the photographer's going for in there. And I'm not saying, you know,
sure.
And I see a lot of stuff. There's some that I find that are like, wow, that picture is sexy as hell. It's a nude, and yet it is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Right.
And I've been able to find that myself, but I mean, I've seen other people, but not me. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder in some cases, is it, you know, some of the things that I find just really compelling or even really sexy mm-hmm. are almost unintentionally so,
mm-hmm.
or they feel unintentionally so, right. Like they feel,
that probably means that a lot of people work to make it so.
exactly. Because that sort of simplicity. And we talk about this, whether it's simplicity in design or music or photography, simplicity, stripping away and making something that's simple, that's iconic, is very difficult.
Oh, it's incredibly difficult. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what the answer is to all of that, but I do know that there's a lot of good nude photography and there's a lot of terrible nude photography, and I mm-hmm. I've yet to figure out a good distinction between the two, a verbal distinction, a distinction that I could put into words. You know, it's sort of a know when you see it kind of thing.
For the group, if you're in the group, post either, you know, a link to, or who are some of your favorite, or are there some sort of some nude photographs or nude photographers that you know, that not nude photographers, but photographic nudes that you really identify with as this is sort of the epitome of human form or light and shadow? Or, I mean, because you can go into that whole other direction where, you know, Weston made, sure. you know, bell peppers look incredibly sensual.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's the hottest bell pepper I've ever seen.
Right. I'd love to, you know, see what you guys think. And either email us, podcast it on Taking Pictures, or, you know, find a link to the group in the show notes and post something, you know, that you think is, you know, because some people like Herberts, some people like Terry Richardson, some people like Mapplethorpe.
I do not like Terry Richardson.
I know. But
I just wanted to put out. I just had to add.
I just wanted to reaffirm that every episode there has to be like this.
No Terry.
Yeah. So let us know.
All right. What else we got on here? Let's see.
This email was kind of interesting from Nicholas. You want to take that?
Yeah. Okay. So our friend, friend of the show, Nick Govis, wrote in talking about how people, he called it fetishization of the means of production. You guys often talk about and around this often, but how much do you care how a picture or art is made? I ask this because I'm at an art fair where somebody's selling pictures of Americana and a prominently displayed Bronica S2 on a tripod. Speaking with the artist, clearly part of the appeal is that this stuff is shot on a vintage medium format camera that's now sitting in front of us. Does it really matter? I'm not so sure. If somebody gets an impressive wet plate effect in digital post-processing, for instance, is that not nearly as cool as doing it with chemistry? You know, last night we had a few friends over for lasagna. And one of them works in special effects for TV and movies. So he was fun to talk to. One of them works in the photo department at MoMA. So she's fun to talk to. One of them is a musician. They're fun to talk to, you know. And we were sitting there and I kind of brought this up because somebody mentioned something that kind of clicked it off in my head. And I was thinking about it and it's like, okay, if you're using, say, digital technology to make a thing look like wet plate, digital photography can do all kinds of things that film or wet plate photography or, you know, insert your thing here, could not do. Use it for what it's really, really good for, right? Like use it to its advantages. But using those advantages just to recreate something that was done earlier feels tacky to me. It's the photographic equivalent of the tuxedo shirt t-shirt.
Right. Well, and it's still just an approximation.
Yeah. And
look, I shoot with my little Hipstamatic app
my little wet plates and
all that kind of stuff, but they don't have the depth. They don't have the randomness. If you look at several of them in a row, you can say, oh, that this border's being used again, or oh, okay, this texture's being used again, or, you know, so there is an infinite number of happy accidents that can happen in the analog world.
And that's what makes those things special.
I agree. Yeah. Yes.
So I think that's where it's at. Now, I sometimes will add grain to my photos, but I do that because, you know, these files are so clean that they need like a little dither to soften them a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do that, but I don't see that as, you know, there are really great things about film that aren't sort of special effect noticeable things, like the tonality in black and white film is hard to get the same kind of feel in digital. So, you know, if somebody finds a particular curve or a particular look or, you know, sort of process that allows them to pull out of a digital file and get the same sort of tonal curve as a certain kind of black and white film, not trying to make it look like that film by adding sloppy edges and all the rest of it, but just sort of,
right. Oh,
that tonality that thing had that I like and I wish I could get something like that here. That's cool to me. You know, adding the edges in the film frame and saying, ooh, Kodak, whatever, on the edge. It's like, no, don't do that. You know, don't be that guy.
Add the spirit, not the kitsch.
Yeah,
kind
maybe.
Of thing.
Yeah.
Well, and there's something actually further down in the notes that kind of relates to this. And both of us have been kind of looking at cameras and specs and, you know, we've spent years doing that. And I got to thinking about, you know, all these cameras that are coming out that you know, have 13, 14, 15 stops of dynamic range, they're claiming.
Sure.
And yet the display device you're looking at them on has 8 stops of dynamic range.
Sure, yeah.
So
what's the
advantage? What are we really talking about here? Yeah, what are we really... I mean, yeah, you're starting with a higher, you know, sort of level or bar, but ultimately, you know, unless you're using specialized or specific monitors... A JPEG has more,
sure,
you know, available.
When it comes to,
you know what I'm saying?
When it comes to dynamic range, input versus output, which is kind of what you're kind of saying,
right?
You know, like no print is going to have 14 stops of,
sure.
But
we get so hung up on.
Well, we get hung up on it because it allows you to capture scenes and then sort of condense them. You know, to what you're working with, you know, where the highlights won't blow out or there's more detail in the shadows. So even though it is technically not measured as X amount of stops on the output, you can actually see stuff in the highlights and shadows you couldn't see before because they'd blow out or go black. Right. I mean, that's
sure. But to your point, you're having to you know, you mentioned just a minute ago, you're having to sort of add grain sometimes.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, we've got cameras that, I forget the camera that's coming out or it's out now, but it's got 19, 20 stops of dynamic range, but it looks so incredibly clean.
Yeah.
That you do almost have to take it down a notch.
You
got to sort of hit the edges with some sandpaper.
I will never say no to more dynamic range, or at least I have not hit a place yet where I am frustrated by dynamic range.
Right.
Where it's been too much. If anything, even with my new camera, which is one of the best on the market in this resolve, there are times when I'm like, oh, God, I wish I had like another stop or two, you know, and I'm already at like whatever 14 and a half stops or whatever my camera is.
But to Nicholas's point, it does become sort of a fetish.
A fetish in the same way that, you know, Tom in Michigan gets some new sound devices thing that has, you know, a 6 dB lower noise floor. It's like, well, no one's complaining about the noise floor to begin with, you know?
Right.
And I understand that. And it's the same thing with resolution for the most part, you know, how often are you actually using 50 megapixels or whatever? There are the odd times when somebody really wants to crop a tiny piece of a frame out and use it for a cover like I had happen last year. And it worked okay because I had enough pixels. So it sort of saved my butt there. But
some people just do it because they can. Yeah, I mean, look at, you know, Marquez Brownlee is shooting YouTube videos on a Red. Well, okay.
Yeah. Now,
I mean, it's great, but 90% of the people that are watching what you shoot are looking at it in 1080p on 7 or 8 stops.
Right. But again, you know, the look that's captured, even if it is condensed and color graded and pushed down and compressed, you know, you set up a 5D Mark II and you set up a Blackmagic Cinema camera and you set up an Arri Alexa and you set up a Red camera and you shoot the same exact scene, it's going to look better on those high-end cameras, even if in the end it's pulled down and compressed and shot down. Now, I don't know that he necessarily
feels
needs
so
it.
Better feels like an arbitrary sort of justification. It'll look different.
It'll look different, but more like for Marquez Brownlee, I agree. But if I was filming a movie, I would rather do it on the thing that is capturing more of what's actually in front of me, so that I have more options in post, so that I can have something that feels, funny enough, the more dynamic range a camera has, the more to me, and this is weird, it kind of feels like film, even though film doesn't have that much dynamic range, mostly because you can take the ends of the digital curve, which are not that pretty, and kind of curve them out. You know what I mean? Like you can have a soft knee on the top and the bottom so that it's pretty linear through the middle, but that at the ends it kind of, it's a nice smooth curve into white and it curves nice smooth down into black.
Fair point.
And you end up with something.
You can roll off a little gentler.
Right. You can throw away a little bit at either end and it ends up feeling a little more organic. And I think that's where this stuff comes into play. But I agree with you. It's, you know, pixel peeping is pixel peeping. People are going to obsess about it. Different people are going to obsess about it. You know, I was reading the Phoblographer's like really early review of the GFX or where the Fuji is, right, this morning.
Right.
I was actually emailing with him about it because he was like, I can't open these files and capture one. I was like, I think I might have a solution for you. But he was complaining that it's just these lenses, the two lenses they have and the thing, it's just too sharp. He's like, he's like, it's bad for portraits. It's just too sharp. But I'm like, well, you know, that's relative, right? I mean, there's people for whom you would say, well, the same thing. If somebody was shooting a 4x5 view camera portraits back in the day, it's going to give you massive amounts of information. That just means that your makeup has to be better, your lighting has to be better, whatever it is.
Is it
going to show flaws in reality? Yes. But I would rather, it's not that it's too sharp as in it's over sharpening. It's that it's that accurate. Personally, I would rather take massively accurate and deal with it after the fact. You know what I mean? Like, give me as much information as you can, and I'll do stuff with it. If I want to blur it down or smear it or go, you know, retouch every single pore, I'd rather have the pores there and have to deal with them rather than have a thing that just kind of looks kind of soft to begin with, you know? Right. But
like the next thing on the list.
Right. Yeah. But there's lots of people who love that, you know?
I will say that a friend of mine has one of the new Fuji GFXs and just shot a magazine layout for it and can't publish them yet because it has to come out in the magazine. I mean, you know that whole thing. But sent me one of the files.
Beautiful.
And oh my God, it's gorgeous. It is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to my world.
Really?
It's addictive. And I think that's part of the problem, right? Is you're just like, oh, that's so nice. I want that. Even though, like, you don't need that, but you could understand how that would be fun, you know, to have those files that big.
Yeah. I mean, you can always take it away. You can't put it back.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, so yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you in terms of it's nice to have. Where I'm at on my personal level is, you know, does it make a difference to my work?
Right. Yeah.
Not so much.
Right. Exactly. Yep.
So,
Here, let me put a link to the little Footblogger thing about the GFX.
Yeah. Hey, Chris. On the other side of it.
Yeah. Oh God. Okay. So you put
these
I'll,
are rough.
I'll let you
I'm
start.
Sorry.
I'll let you start.
Well, there was a post NPR. This is an NPR post. First Lady Melania Trump gets her first official portrait. And politics aside, this is not a good photo.
Yeah.
This is a Sears portrait studio, Vaseline on the lens, glamour shot. Yes or no?
Yes. I mean, I think they probably did it in post, but yes. What I don't understand is this woman is objectively beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. She's a model. She's literally, that's what she does, right? You know? And you take her and you stick her, this is the upper floors of the thing, according to like my West Wing knowledge, right? This is like one of the window up in the residence or something.
Yeah. Or it's a custom elephant backdrop.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I don't know that this was even taken at the White House. Look at the hair on her.
It doesn't look like it.
Look at the hair on the right shoulder going into the window. It looks like it was shot on white and superimposed.
It does to me.
Which, are you kidding me? You can't get the woman down to the White House, set up some lights? I remember...
Well, it would cost $3 million.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, I mean, you take this woman who's objectively beautiful, and then you Photoshop and smear her and smooth her. Looks like one of those really crappy smooth skin plug-in effects.
Yeah.
Like, that's what this looks like.
One of the,
You know, no, you have, what's his name? Who's the crazy guy who does the stuff for Annie?
Oh, Hurley?
No. The retoucher.
Oh, the retoucher.
Yeah, not Danzig.
Victor... Gosh, what's his name? He's done work with Keatley as well.
Anyway, like you get one of those guys to do it, right? You get some serious heavy if that's what you're going for. The funny thing is, and not for nothing, but I put it in after that. I put Trump's official portrait as well. Looks exactly the same. It's completely superimposed in front of a cheesy background.
Yeah, it looks like if you've ever been to DC, there's a gift shop across the street from the Treasury that has basically this setup. It has a podium and the Oval Office, and you can go get your photo taken in front of the podium as if you're, you know, Spicer giving a press conference, or at the desk in the Oval Office.
That's what it feels like. Now, not, and this is, again, not political at all, but if you go back and you look at Obama's official portraits, okay? And we talked about these because, you know, we've been on the air that long.
Let's talk about Nixon just for a minute.
Here we go. Here's a complete portraits. So Obama has his official portrait, his original official portrait, and I'll put it in the show notes here, Jeffrey, so you can grab it and talk to me, look at it.
Well, there was the first one, and then the second one where it's a little more interesting.
Right. The first one, from I remember the story was that him and Pete Souza and whoever else were between meetings, like on the lower floor of the Treasury building, and there were some flags, and he, you know, set up a softbox on a little reflector on the other side, and 24-105 zoom lens on a 5D. Here, Mr. President, stand there for a second. Snap, snap, snap. Okay, great, thanks. That's the official portrait. Like, that's, you know, him against this white wall with flags behind him. But there's no retouching. It is just the image out of the camera, right? I mean, maybe it was toned or something like that, but this is not heavily retouched image. Or if it was, it was really done expertly. But I think Pete Souza's thing was, no, this is a picture of the president. This isn't a glamour shot of the president, right? The second one was the one in the Oval Office, which where he's smiling, which is a very sweet looking picture as well. But I just, it's like, what did these people do? What are these pictures, you know?
Yeah. In each of these cases, there were many choices in terms of the aesthetics of that shot that had to be made before it was released.
Oh yeah, this is totally like somebody completely micromanaged this entire thing, in not in a successful way, right?
And it's not. I mean, I really don't mean this to be political. I really don't, but. It is not a welcoming photograph of her.
No. I mean,
it doesn't speak to First Lady to me. It doesn't.
No. It's weird. She obviously, this woman obviously does not want to be doing this job, right? You know, this is not, Michelle Obama's first portrait. I mean, it's a very nice picture somewhere in the residence, you know, with decent light and whatever it is. But she was a much more welcoming person, seemingly, you know what I mean, much more interested in being part of that job, you know. I just look at this stuff and I go, somebody must have decided that this is how they wanted it to be, you know, this super yeah, it does, it looks like Vaseline. I want to see the full res version. Is there a full res version, Jeffrey? Look at the hair
I
on
have
the
not
right
found
shoulder
one.
That's got that is somebody who couldn't blend that hair into the background behind it. That's what that is.
It looks a little halo-y.
Yeah. Yeah, this is totally put together.
And I mean, frankly, given his sort of penchant for paintings, I'm surprised they didn't commission paintings. And I think the paintings would have turned out better.
Yeah, but nowadays you need the official photographic portrait that, you know, can go on the website and whatever it is. I think some ways, I think Trump's picture is worse than hers. I mean, she's at least she could take a good picture, this woman. You know, but Trump just has this weird scowl on his face. Like, you know, he just looks very angry. It's like, dude, you're the president of the United States. Don't be so angry. It's fascinating.
I think the Trump picture, it feels like there's such a disconnect for me between the coolness of the background and the sort of overall magenta cast, at least on my screen, of him in the foreground.
Yeah.
That it does feel like they were, I don't know whether they were, whether they weren't sandwiched together, but it does feel like two different layers that have been composed.
Well, okay,
together.
Here's the thing. How could you do this picture otherwise? You would stick him and a flag outside on a thing in the front lawn and then shoot with it. No, you would never do that. And if you did, you would have the two, the color right between the two, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously this is some sort of, unless they desaturate, I don't even know. It's like, either way, my point is that they both thought too much about this stuff and also didn't think about it in the right way, you know? They thought too much about it and also didn't think about it right. So, yeesh, scary. Ugh.
I would like to see a redo because I think they could pull it off a little
better. Of course. And I have a number of friends who have taken pictures of Trump over the years. And
he has taken some good photographs. Yeah. He's taken photographs that fit his personality.
Yes. And he looks like he does him, right? I mean, I understand, you walk in and he goes, "All right, where do you want me? All right, sitting here. All right, you ready? Here's my look. Boom. Snap, snap, snap. Right. Are you done? All right, we're moving on." You know what I mean? Like, he has his thing, right? Because he's a busy guy. He's got to do this.
Okay. So. But here, look at this. Look at this. Here's a Reuters picture, and maybe I don't know how we can get this.
Like the Time one is the one on the cover with the horns. That was even fun. Reuters picture. I'll go ahead. Keep talking. I'll get it.
That's a better.
That
picture.
That is a much better picture. Right?
That's a better picture of him. It's toned better. It looks overall more balanced. Yeah. You know, he's not a bad looking guy.
No.
But in this photograph, they just did not do him justice.
It's very, very odd. Now, I wonder does it say whether these were taken by that woman they just hired as their new...
The official photographer? I couldn't find that information.
Yeah, either could I.
And there was no metadata.
Wow. It's just, it's perhaps no surprise that First Lady Melania Trump's first official portrait is a glamour shot.
Yeah, but it's like a portrait studio glamour shot. It's not even a good glamour shot.
Yeah. You could, it just, you see somebody like that, beautiful woman, like, give me beautiful woman, give me a nice soft box. I can make a very nice portrait of her.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
yes,
the outfit
she's not
that
20
she wore
years
at the inauguration.
Anymore, you know? Yeah.
Beautiful outfit.
Right.
With her hair up
she's
and everything.
A beautiful
photograph
woman.
That. Beautiful.
Yes.
Fine. Perfect.
Yes.
It's like you've tried to make them look goofy.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway. Enough about
that. Anyway, moving on. What else we got? Oh, hey, you know, you put a thing up on the group. Can we talk about this for like 2 seconds?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
You put up a thing up on your group how you're cloning your Mac drive and then you're sticking up on Backblaze or whatever you chose to do, something like that, right?
Yeah, I'm looking for a solution to back up my phone photos.
Right.
And you use Google.
I do two things. I actually use Dropbox and Google. But
okay.
I used to use Dropbox. The one thing I didn't like about Dropbox is that you had to actively open the Dropbox app every once in a while to have it upload.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And the Google one, I recently went above my 17 gigs of free space on Gmail.
Well, photos you get unlimited.
Photos you get unlimited if you want to upload ones that they recompress.
Want
the original.
And is the that's been the thing. Is the recompression significant? Because all I want is to be able to access them. I'm going to keep my goal now is I import them into my library so they are on my Mac and then they're backed up to an external drive. That external drive will likely get backed up to either Backblaze or CrashPlan. Right. I'm leaning towards Backblaze.
So if you're doing that, that's fine. And then you're manually deleting them from your phone.
I just want to get them off of my phone to reclaim some of that
then,
space.
Then the compressed versions going to Google would probably be fine. If you're just like, you and I are hanging out and you go, oh, hey, I took the picture of this diner in LA. Let me pull it up. Like, is that what?
That's exactly what
it. Okay. Then
exactly
I think
it.
The
so it's
Google
either, it's either the Am-
go ahead.
That or the Amazon Prime, because I already pay for Amazon Prime and Amazon has the same kind of thing. Unlimited photos, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I mean, my thing is that I have a lot of stuff in my Google accounts. Like my Google accounts are sort of my primary accounts. So I figured might as well all have it all in one place. And I like the way that Google Photos does the, finds the people, you know, it says, you know, who is this? This is my nephew Bert.
Right.
And it finds pictures all the way down to when he was an hour old and knows that it's Bert, you know, creepily. It's really good. So that's handy. So I could, you know, open it up and say, you know, who's my mom? You know, where's Cindy? You know, and like, it'll show me all the pictures of my mother. So that's handy. I think for what you're talking about, the double compressed versions on Google will be more than enough. I just think of it as if this is my one copy of these things, I want it to be high quality.
Right.
Know?
What are they using? Are they using what's the Yahoo compression?
Oh, that new sort of weird thing that they came. Remember Google was talking about doing that other compression standard we talked about, I don't know, 10 episodes ago or something.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if they ever implemented?
I don't know if it's that or if they're just compressing them down at like 60% or 80, you know, 70% JPEGs or something, you know, just kind of scrunching them a little more. It's fine for my mother. Before my mother went to Thailand, I set her up with this setup so that whenever it goes on Wi-Fi, it automatically just uploads her pictures to Google and then wipes them from the phone so that she doesn't have to worry about losing her phone and the pictures are somewhere. And for her pictures of Thailand, my mom's not a photographer. It's like, you know, oh, here's my husband on an elephant or whatever. Like those pictures, it's fine. You know what I mean?
I was on my list today of things to do is take the originals and then pull down one of the Google versions and just do a side by side.
Yeah, that'll do.
I doubt that they're going to be that.
You know, my issue with what you're saying is that one of the cool things about the Goog, is that you can set it so that once it's done uploading them, it deletes them from your phone. Like, okay, these are backed up. I'm going to delete them, which is really handy. But in your situation where, let's say you go to LA, you take some pictures, Google uploads them and deletes them, you don't want it to do that because you want to come home and pull the originals off, which means you're going to have to manually control deleting them. Does that make sense? See what I'm saying?
Maybe you could
have it where you turn off that feature when you're away, come back, pull them all off, and then, you know, flip that switch on and it'll, you know, maybe that there's some way to do it, but you're just going to have to think a little bit about the workflow.
Yeah, because what I don't want to do is only have a compressed version. I'd like to keep the originals and
exactly.
pull them off.
Now, I will say that if any of you who are not backing up the photos on your phone and you care about the photos on your phone, you're insane. Go back up the photos on your phone. whether it's a Dropbox account that you're uploading or Google or Amazon now does these free things, like just get them somewhere else, you know? Right. Unless you're taking, you know, some sort of pictures you absolutely don't want on the cloud somewhere. Cause it's all, you know, if you're some famous person or something, I guess that could be an argument, but,
even then, you know, a lot of this stuff now is encrypted end to end.
I mean, I trust Google way more than I trust Apple. Like, I will not use the Apple.
See, I'm the other way.
I just mean from a security point of view, but from a know what they're doing with the cloud and are not going to lose my data point of view. Like, Google all the way. Apple, like, turn this thing on. Oh, it happened to delete all these things while we were converting from iCloud to what? It's like, no. I don't want. Apple doesn't do that stuff well in my experience, but I don't know. Your mileage may vary.
True.
If anybody has any better suggestions for Jeffrey, let him know.
Yeah.
He needs suggestions. No.
I need them.
I need a haircut. I mean, not as bad as you need a haircut, but I need a haircut.
You should get billneedsatrim.com.
I should go get a haircut in the next few days. I should go before I go out to San Francisco and see my fourth grade teacher that I haven't seen in 30 years. She's going to be like, you look like a scruffy dog.
You don't
want to
look like a ragamuffin. Right. You don't want to
use the ragamuffin word. Is that a common thing?
Did I just?
I did.
Yeah. So I guess I do. Yeah.
Did you get that from your mom or your parents?
Probably my grandfather.
Hey, you look like a goddamn ragamuffin.
Oh, no. He would never
swear. Oh, okay.
You look like a ragamuffin.
There you go. I'm kidding. He did swear. All the
You're
time.
Like a railroad worker. Wait, he was a railroad right. worker.
Genius.
If you want to get billneedsatrim.com, you should go to Squarespace and make a website.
Yep. Wait. Hold on. Yeah. Hold on.
Does it not exist?
They had a new thing.
A new what? A new template?
Make your next move. No.
Yeah.
Maybe there wasn't. Make your next move.
Yeah, make your next move is the current campaign. It's great.
Right.
With Squarespace, you can make your next move, make your new next website. You should move to Squarespace. Beautiful, beautiful websites on Squarespace. Award-winning designer templates that you can create your website or online store. They've got it's all part of Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. And they've got award-winning 24/7 customer service. You can get a hold of these people via chat or email 24/7, and they'll get back to you real quick. It's fantastic. And now their new thing, Jeffrey, is that you can park your domains at Squarespace. It used to be that if you had a Squarespace site, you know, you could have your domain through there, but now you can actually just go buy billneedsahaircut.com. And if you don't, Bill Needs a Trim, is that what you originally said?
Yep.
.com. You can go buy that on Squarespace. And then when you get around to it, actually set up a website and start building it out on Squarespace. And their unique domain experience that's fully transparent, simple to set up, flexible for any kind of website. And if you're with certain other domain providers, that shall not be named, but have race cars after them.
Go, Papa. Yeah,
nice. you should consider moving to something like Squarespace because it'll be a much better experience. They're not going to try to upsell you all the time. Squarespace is used by a wide range of creative people, businesses, musicians, designers, artists, restaurants, and more. I saw. I went to a website the other day that. I opened it up and I was like, oh, look at that Squarespace site. Because, you know, do you notice Squarespace sites everywhere now? You like open them up and you're like, that's a really nice site. Oh, yeah. Look, it's a Squarespace site.
Especially the commerce. Yeah.
Oh, especially the commerce stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they've got there's a specific. And then they've just. What was the email I got the other? Like the message. They're doing a new checkout thing where on. I forget what tier it's on. It might be on one of the upper tiers, but you don't. Instead of going to Square or going to PayPal, right. it's all internal.
Oh,
now.
Wow.
It doesn't redirect you to another domain. Right. which is kind of cool.
That's exactly what you want.
You know, because some people, they kind of,
whoa,
they kind
where
of go,
am
well,
I?
Wait a minute. Yeah, they get confused. But so now it's all, you know what? Here, keep
okay.
going.
All right. So, you know, if you're a musician, you're a designer, you're an artist. I think the restaurant thing is really cool because half these templates that are restaurant sort of specific templates have a menu feature that lets you just type in your menu and have
right.
it all on there, which is fantastic. So go start your free trial today at squarespace.com. And when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code OTP and you will get 10% off your first purchase and you will show your support for our wonderful
yes.
On Taking Pictures program.
Yes. It is called Checkout on Your
Domain.
Checkout
on Your Domain.
This feature. Yeah. With Checkout on Your Domain, customers ready to purchase will be directed to a custom secure checkout page on your domain. They'll see a URL with your primary domain in it that looks like this, https://yourdomain.com/checkout. The entire shopping experience will live on your domain, creating a consistent look and a sense of security. Yeah. So you're not going to pop
not
out
actually.
And go,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
PayPal and then get redirected. It's all going to, it's seamless.
Fantastic.
So let's see. Checkout on your domain is enabled on your site automatically if you're on the advanced commerce plan, you have any custom domain,
yep.
You have SSL enabled, and there you go. The only caveat it looks like is checkout on your domain is not available for donations.
Oh, okay. Well, that's safe.
But that's kind of neat. I mean,
so great.
They're just, you know, they're streamlining the process even more.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So thank you so much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. Squarespace, make your next move.
Make it. Make that move.
All right. So what else we got here? Okay. I watched the trailer for Mission Control, the movie, and I had it on, and Heather's just like, is that a movie made for you? And
yeah.
I said, yeah, probably. I said, not that I'm going to hear any stories I haven't heard before, but it's going to be fun hearing them tell them.
You might.
First person.
You might.
I might. Yes. I've read a few thousand pages on the subject, but yes, I'm excited.
Maybe
for
there's
it.
Stuff in the archives.
I'm can't wait. When is this coming out? On demand 4/14.
Yeah, April 14th. It will be on iTunes, and I think. Oh, what was the other thing? It's the other one of the other streaming services, but.
Yeah, pre-order on iTunes. How much are they charging for this thing?
I think it's like $20 or something. Yeah, $19.99.
Yeah.
$25 for the Blu-ray. And there are screenings.
$12.99 on iTunes to pre-order HD.
$9.99
for SD.
Yeah. They're showing at the Alamo Draft House. That would be
Ooh.
Really cool to see
Oh,
it
I
there.
Could probably go see it there. Maybe I'll go see it at the Alamo Draft House.
Right?
Yeah. Can't go wrong.
Internet on demand. It's going to be on Amazon, Google Play, Vudu, the PlayStation Network, Vimeo, Xbox 360, and
Vudu
is
the one you were thinking of, right?
Vudu. That's the one I was thinking of. Yes. Yes. Because T-Mobile, it's Tuesday, right? So every Tuesday, T-Mobile does this thing called T-Mobile Tuesdays. And they give away, you know, like prizes and tchotchkes and things just for being a customer. And one of the things was a movie rental on Vudu. And today, actually, they gave away a free year of MLB TV to all subscribers. So you can watch all the baseball games on your device free of charge. Yeah.
Are you a baseball fan? I know you go every once in a while and I go every once in a while the past few years, but I mean, would you actually sit and watch a baseball game on your phone while working? Okay.
Yes. I was a huge baseball fan. I loved baseball when I was a kid. I played baseball for years. I loved baseball. And I stopped. But, you know, last year and little part of 15, you know, I caught some games. And last year, I think we went to, I don't know, 4, 5, 6, something like that games. And, you know, I'm excited about it again. I can't wait. We're going to a game next week.
I saw that. Yeah.
And the Hirschhorn. Fielding got tickets to the Hirschhorn for the Infinity Mirror.
Oh, that should
exhibit.
Be fun.
So stoked for that.
So
anyway, Mission Control
yeah,
movie.
Mission Control.
Thought
movie.
That would be right up your alley.
I put a link in the show notes for anybody who's a space nerd. Go check that out. Okay, so shortly before the show was released, I did a little more reading though, and it's a little bit of a head fake. So everyone's complaining because the current Apple Mac Pro, which is the black trash can, as they call it.
Right.
Came out in October of 2013.
13,
and hasn't been updated since, and they haven't lowered the prices, and they haven't upgraded it, and pretty much everything in it is now pretty old.
All relative. It's still a wicked
fast
machine.
It's a very fast machine, but it is very expensive for what it is. They True. Apparently have decided that they're going to essentially lower the prices. So now the $29.99 model goes from a 4-core to a 6-core, and from the dual G300 GPUs to the dual G500 GPUs. And then the $4,000 model goes from 6 to 8 cores and from D500s to D800s. So
it's kind of a silly bump. Though.
Well, this is what it is. This is basically a lower. They don't want to lower the price, so they give it a spec bump in the meantime. However, apparently there are there's new stuff coming down the line. Hopefully.
They're gonna do a new iMac. They have to.
Yeah, he says these next gen Mac Pros and Pro displays. Apparently, there are next gen Mac Pros coming means next year, not later this year. In the meantime, Apple is releasing meager speed bump updates to the existing Mac Pros, but that means that they are doing something, and then to the Mac Pro, and apparently they're going to come out with a new iMac that's targeted to large segments of the pro market. So maybe they make an iMac version that has a 6-core GPU or CPU
right.
with a faster GPU. The real problem I have with all these machines is the fact that if I'm going to have it for 4 or 5 years and I can't upgrade anything in them.
Absolutely.
It's like, that's insane. I'm getting a GPU that is probably already behind the curve because that's the way Apple yeah. works. And then it's not only a year or two old, it's a year or two old plus 3 or 4 years. And now I've got a 6-year-old GPU and a computer that came out today,
And a beautiful display that you cannot use as anything other than the display on that computer, because they've eliminated the ability to use those displays as just
exactly.
displays.
I understand what they're doing, and for 80-90% of the people, it's great and makes everyone happy. It makes me crazy to think that these things, I know daughter cards and all the rest of it is just a terrible way to do it, but there's got to be some way that I don't have to throw out my computer when the GPU gets slow.
Right.
So anyway, also in interesting news, Dell last week put out, or is it last week or recently? Let's see.
I think it was a week or two ago.
Oh, actually, it says January 5th on this one. Anyway, for $5,000, they've got a new... Dell has an 8K 32-inch monitor.
It's big.
Oh, my God. It's huge. It is... 8K ends up being 7680 by 4320.
It's a lot
pixel density of 280 PPI. My current machine, I think, is like a 170 PPI. So...
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is a crap ton of pixels. That is almost big enough that you could see a whole one of my current images,
I mean, what do you need to drive that?
Well, that's the thing. I think that it requires multiple DisplayPort connections.
But multiple cards as well? So do you have to run SLI?
I think you can just run it from a single... relatively modern fast card. You just need multiple connections to get the stuff over there. Yeah, it's 33 megapixels. Now, for $5,000, that's crazy. But if that was a $999 monitor,
well, and in 3 years, it probably
right,
will be.
Exactly. Just like my 4K monitor, which cost me $1,200, they sell the same one for $400 now. So, it's just a matter of time. But I just wanted to say that's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited about that. Not that I need a new monitor today, but it would be nice. Again, more pixels and more higher density is a little bit like the dynamic range thing. I will never say no to more pixels or more density. But pretty cool. Pretty cool. A friend of mine who's a retoucher uses one of the Trashcan Mac Pros. And she recently had to she needed to get a new calibration system for her monitor. Have you used any of these things in the last few years? Because mine,
the calibrators,
Okay. Because mine is a i1 display Pro or whatever it is, which is sort of, I think it's still sort of the standard that people use. But the people at the place sold her on the new Spider, which I always had like weird connotations. I always used to read things that the Spider 3 and 4 weren't all that accurate. Maybe the new one is. I don't know. If anybody has any thoughts about that, send them in.
What is it? Spider.
I think it's the Spider 5.
Spider
5?
Yeah. Is that the new?
Yeah. But it's okay. Still, I think it's like 2 years old already. It's not like it's brand new. But anyway, something to put in there. What do you, you have a thing in here. Would you pay to use social media from last week?
Yeah, I was thinking about how we use it and why we use it and how, you know, we've basically given away. And part of it was on, and this is going to be political for just a second, regarding the FCC and privacy, that the current administration is basically rolling back the FCC protections that prevent ISPs from selling and tracking.
I think they're also technically making it so that the FCC can't regulate it anymore.
Yeah. The bill is such that the FCC cannot pass regulations to protect your privacy anymore, and your search history, your email history, health and financial data, the apps that you use, the websites you visit, all of that can now be sold without your knowledge, without your consent, without anything, thanks to the current administration. So, you know what? I would say I would call bullshit on that if there were D's after the names too.
No, that's a terrible plan. Regardless of who you're talking about.
It's an awful plan. But we have agreed to this when we accept the EULA of Facebook.
Right.
Of,
but Facebook is one thing because I could decide not to use Facebook. If it's the ISP, I have no other way to connect to the internet.
And that's kind of where I'm going with it. There are two things here. There's the one thing of what do you do when there are no more choices, when it really is the lesser of two evils, when all of them are selling your, now, you know, I think Comcast came out and said that it had no plans to sell browsing history. You know, who knows
or
how it's going to go,
but all the apparent, data and it's like, oh, this percentage of our,
it's just an aggregate. Yeah. There is still some argument to be made about personal privacy. But regardless, the argument about social media was, you know, we sign up for these things and we exchange our email address and potentially anonymized statistics in exchange for the ability to like and poke and share and all this kind of thing. And I was thinking about if social media were more like film, in that it cost you X number of cents or X number of dollars to post or to like or to comment.
The same case for email back in the day, right? If it cost spammers one-tenth of 1 cent to send an email, which wouldn't be anything to you, it would be, you know, 10 cents a day or whatever it is. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Right. But if you're sending 100,000 of them or 100 million of them, then it adds up very quickly. Yeah. So would you, I guess one of the questions was, would you use social media if there was an actual physical cost or an actual monetary cost to using it, rather than, you know, would you be willing to give up, if given the choice, would you give up the information and use it for free, or would you pay money per use? It's sort of the freemium model of gaming, right? You get the core features for nothing.
Do you have an answer to this question?
I'm still working through it, but I think the you know, it's by platform for me. You know, I enjoy what I see on Instagram. I enjoy the sort of inspiration that comes from that, but I have more sort of chat feedback conversation on Twitter by far than Facebook.
Yep.
So there's more engagement on them. You know, if I had to dump one today and you know, there was a ruling that came down and said, oh, you can only use two. Okay. Well, I would dump Facebook. If I had to dump, you could only use one, that would be tough, but I think I would dump Twitter and only use Instagram because I love looking at people's work more than I look at than I love looking at, you know, CNN or Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, I find Twitter probably overall more useful. Instagram right behind it. If I had to pay for Facebook, I probably wouldn't pay for Facebook. Although it's, the problem is for me, especially now with all this stuff with my current project and stuff, I almost need all these things just to keep track of everyone and find people and organize people and talk to people, because everyone uses different things. I am juggling emails, texts, Facebook messages, Instagram messages, Twitter DMs, and Twitter replies for people who are interested or want to do this stuff. And trying to remember who I talk to.
So you learn to juggle.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to figure out where I talked to somebody last is actually a real problem. I feel like we need to
remember
like
what
was the thing?
I was just going to say Trillium. You were going to there, right? Yeah. Trillium, for those of you who don't remember, was an app that could aggregate all these different, you know, messaging programs into one unified interface.
Oh, God, it is actually a problem. And I don't think that Instagram does a great job of letting you know when you have messages in there. Because they also do the thing where the messages come in and that you have to approve them from certain people. Did you notice that?
Right.
Which is like, no. Yep. And
I've missed out on a ton of them that people send me email and go, hey, what's going on? I sent you a thing on Instagram.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Didn't see it.
Yeah. So I think that's frustrating. I have very mixed feelings about all this because I think it's a requirement for what I do. But if it wasn't a requirement for what I do, I don't think that I would be blown away by social media in general. You know, I mean, we've discussed that before.
Right.
It's just like, I don't think I'm happier because I have social media in my life, you know? I'd be fine without it. But the question also becomes, if Facebook said, all right, look, we're not going to sell all your data or not going to track you all over the internet, but it's going to cost you $5 a month. Would you do that?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's people have asked, like, why don't they do that? Or why doesn't Google do that? It's like, well, they don't do that because once you give somebody the option, then it says that you could not do that. You know, it's sort of like a no. Like, we're just kind of tracking everybody.
They'll make more revenue by selling your info than they would by charging you $5
and the complexity of setting up that system of who's blacklisted or whitelisted and payments. And, like, it's not worth it. It's like, no, we're aggregating data. That's how we work. And something like Google itself gets better by tracking people because that's kind of part of what goes in the algorithm, you know. So they're using it for good instead of evil, in my personal opinion. Although other people can disagree.
Yes and no. It's, you know, if you look at a video on YouTube, let's say, you know, when I was building, looking at bench plans, I looked at a couple, videos on people building workbenches.
Okay.
Well, the next time I visit YouTube, my home list is chock full of videos. I don't want to see 42 videos on benches. I just wanted to see the two.
You know,
so anytime you look at something else, it assumes that that's what you're going to be looking for.
Yeah, it's,
ad infinitum.
It's not very smart. Years ago, Jeffrey, you're going to love this. Years ago, I rewatched what's the movie where the dream inside the dream? Inception. I rewatched Inception and the weird little top that he uses to prove that he's in reality or whatever. I was just like, oh, that's a pretty design. I wonder what that is. So I looked it up and found it, and I ended up looking at it on Amazon or on somewhere just because they actually sell those things for like $20 or whatever. They're precision machined, whatever, you know.
Right.
Years,
aircraft,
exactly.
Aluminium.
Years later, for Valentine's Day the other day, was a red anodized version of that top as a Google ad. On, you know, Slashdot or something that I went to, right? I mean, you're right. It just gets it wrong. I don't want that thing. I was just looking.
And it feels, that's
curious.
What feels invasive.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't think of the name of these work pants that a friend of mine recommended.
Carhartt
is the
brand
name.
I'm wearing some right now.
So I look it up, and now when I go to websites and I don't have an ad blocker,
you get
enabled,
Carhartt stuff.
What do I see?
Yeah.
Well, it's like you look for it one time and then you're bombarded.
I think that's just because the algorithms are dumb, not because they're trying to be gross. You know, that's my take on it. You know, It's sort of like when somebody says something that somebody else thinks is rude, it's like, well, you may think that it's rude, but like, did they have malice in saying that? Or is it just that they don't know? Or it's, you know what I mean? You know, that there's a lot of that kind of stuff around too, where it's like, you know,
right.
He was an idiot by saying guys to, all right, we'll see you later, guys. And it's two women and women get upset about that. He's like, well, he wasn't saying it because he was trying to say that you need to be guys or it's a patriarch. It's like, it's a figure of speech that people use, you know? So I don't know. I think that kind of stuff is really interesting. And I think that, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't pay for it. There's your answer.
Yeah. There you go. All right. So half hour later, no, is the answer. And there it is.
We need an assignment for this week.
We do need an assignment for this week. Last week was saturation. Well, we could say monochrome and go the other way.
We've done that already, though.
We've done them all. There's nothing we haven't done.
Full or empty?
Full or empty?
Like a contrast of two different things.
You mean in the same tag
or one of
pick one? We could do empty 1 week and full the next.
Done. Empty?
All right. Empty.
But let's go look at some pictures.
Empty lake, empty
into
streets.
We're into the assignments this week. Saturation, Todd Schick's cars, very saturated.
I love that. And honestly, every time I see one of Todd's pictures, I want to go to Saskatchewan.
Yeah. You should go. You should go visit.
Enjoy.
It's in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
I think Mario was on the International Space Station while taking this picture. Did you?
That's what it looks like, doesn't it? It looks like we're looking down at a burn that's going to take place. That's cool.
A burn that's about to take place.
Right?
Like it.
Stage 2 separation about to begin. Right?
We're go for burn.
Go for burn. All right.
That's a cool picture. It's very cool. A lot of nice saturation. I like all these masks that Mike Walder put up. Peter Geyser put up the very, very saturated bluebells or whatever those little flowers are called.
Yep. Corollas. Nice stuff, Corollas.
Govis has that nice taqueria. Taqueria.
Yep. Jeremy Bryant, I dig that shot of the gas station and the guy on the bike. Very cool. Yep, downtown LA.
I like Gardner's picture from Weehawken of the city sky, the classic city skyline in the river. Reflection.
Right.
But well done and very HDR. I like it. Interestingly enough, he's in Weehawken, which I do believe is where Alexander Hamilton got shot.
On that bluff there, from what they said. Yeah. See?
Don't turn around. Gardner, there's a guy with a gun behind you 200 years ago.
Nick Govis, botanical. I love the infrared. Love, love, love the infrared.
You always love infrared.
I do.
What is Govis? What does he have that he infrareds?
EM10s. He had them converted. At least one had them converted to infrared sensors. Cool. It's really cool. Yeah. Rob Eves. Love that. Outside a food truck.
Yep.
That. What else? What do we got here? Hello, Ken from Salvation Mountain. Did you guys ever go there when you went out to Salton Sea? Did you get that far?
I went to Salton Sea alone because Conrad had work to do. I went to Bombay Beach. Is the other thing further down?
You got to keep going. Yeah, I think you keep going. I think it's toward Nyland. And it's called Salvation Mountain. And there's just this crazy hill of concrete and junk and graffiti. And there's all sorts of folks and
that was by far one of the weirdest places I've ever been.
It's a trippy place. Yeah. Paul Yan, nice perspective. Yeah. Slab City. Yeah. It's weird. Really weird.
I don't understand how these places exist.
Well, you know, it was in the 50s.
Wow. Look at that.
Salton Sea was supposed to be like the California Riviera. It was supposed to be a vacation spot.
Oh, I see. It's people painted a bunch of stuff on like the. Oh, right. That's weird.
Right.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Craig B. posting a Kodachrome shot from the 70s.
I did that last week.
There he goes. Yeah, you did. It's hard not
it's
to,
so
though, right?
Hard.
Matthew Zhu, good one. Yeah, a lot of great
stuff.
I
like how Craig says it's the correct amount of saturation. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, yeah. Says you.
It's the correct amount of saturation. As if Kodachrome was so accurate.
Wait, can I moderate that post and just like mess with him and duplicate the layer and make it like overlay
Oh, sure.
or something?
Yeah. I think you and I could do anything we want. Hey, did you see Kenneth Wilson did that picture of the girl with different filters in front? That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, with the like the shadows
yeah,
behind
that's
or something.
Really neat. Nice job.
Yeah, it's really neat. Yeah, really neat.
All right, what else you got?
So Empty is the
yeah,
one,
I think
huh?
Empty's good. Wow, that one's really cool. All I right. like that Kenneth Wilson shot. That's a neat idea.
Yeah, I like the one of the little boy pulling the cloud too. He another Kenneth Wilson
Man,
shot.
And who is this Kenneth Wilson? Showing everyone up. What does he think he is? This week's photographer of the week is someone that my wife sent me because I don't know how she ended up on this woman's site. Conceptual photographer, interiors, but also sort of exteriors comped in somehow.
Yeah.
But here's the...
Yeah, she builds dioramas. I saw her. She came up in a feed and it might have been on Flipboard.
Okay.
That may be... I mean, I don't know if that's where Conrad saw it, but I think that's where
okay.
I saw
Suzanne
her stuff.
Moxay? Could you say...
Yes, okay. Moxay.
Now, here's the thing. You I go believe. To the About page... And it said,
yeah.
Drawn from an archive of collected materials, Suzanne Moxay creates intricate and complex photo montage images. Her method was derived in part from early filmmaking techniques of matte paintings, where backdrops were painted on sheets of glass and integrated by the camera with the live action on set. So this is like, this is Bill parenthetically saying, like in Star Wars Episode 4, right? In A New Hope. When right,
yeah,
right,
yeah, basically, okay. Big matte painting of Obi-Wan exactly. at the shield
exactly,
generator.
Right.
Yeah,
okay,
same thing.
Okay, she builds up the image in her studio using cutout fragments of source material, which she makes into small stage sets on glass panels, and then she re-photographs yep. the sets and manipulates the images digitally, probably to get rid of some of the edges or something, right? An act of reprocessing which
probably.
Takes them further away from original context and broadens the narrative potential. I find when people do crazy stuff like this, I find it fascinating.
Absolutely. And it's an arguably a lost
yeah.
art. You know, this is the way film, especially big special effects films, and some of them are still done this way, but they were these enormous paintings on glass that there would be a little black area or just a not painted area that would then be combined with the blue screen or the extended set or whatever it was on an
right.
optical printer. And you would create these things optically. I mean, think about that too.
Sure.
Right? She's doing all this digitally, but
well, no,
episode
I mean, she,
four.
No, if you go look in the video on the About page, go to 4 minutes in, like 4 minutes, 15 seconds in, it actually shows fragments of things on sheets of glass overlaid that she's going to shoot.
Right. But I mean, she's combining the composites digitally. Like shooting all these layers, it looks like they're at least using some digital manipulation.
I think what she's doing is, I think she's shooting actual sheets on different panels of glass, shooting that whole thing as a stack, and then maybe just cleaning up so you don't see the edges, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
the fact that she's even yeah. printing out these elements and stacking them in real life and then shooting that stack is itself really cool to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's similar to back in the day, Disney used a multiplane
right,
camera.
Yes.
Where they would do it very similarly, but it was right, vertical. Right. So they would have these you know, they'd have the background plate, and then they would have these sort of layers of glass, and they were able to move and get parallax, and you know, it's a
yeah.
fascinating process.
I'm
going to
add a link to the multiplane camera too. But just you know, and I like a lot of the results and images. But here's an example of where, for me, Nick Govis, her methods do improve the way I see the final product. Like, I see the fact that it took her all this time and energy and the way that she makes these things, doing it in real life is far more impressive to me than if she just photo manipulated these things together like I and some other people.
100%. 100%. And I think that's one of the reasons why I am such a fan of Gregory Crudson, is because he goes to the trouble to build and build and build and refine and refine and build and refine. It's physical. It's a physical space.
Yeah.
Yeah. This stuff is absolutely, you know, I thought you'd get a kick out of this one when you put it in there. I thought, you know, especially after your 365 shot the other day of the miniature did. I thought this would be kind of more right up your alley.
Yeah, no, this
is
beautiful. And I like the way she did it. It almost makes me want to play with this kind of stuff, which maybe I will at some point. It's kind of neat. Let's see. Oh, here's another interview with her that I will put up here.
So does she shoot her own?
My guess is that, yeah. You mean the source material?
Yeah, is it all painted? Is it stock? Is it a combination?
You know what,
I'll have to go in. And,
where do you find your materials? The piece that is an uprising is from a series where I use photographs taken around Bow and the River Lay. Leah, it's an interesting area.
Where are
I'm
you
reading,
at?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading an interview. Here, let me put it over here. Sorry. I'm reading that. Where was it? I just had it open and then I lost it. Here we go. Natural environment, more suburban and natural environments together. I use these photographs taken along with printed images, which I found in old books and magazines. Here you go. Especially from those that are produced in the start of color printing from around the 1940s to 1970s. Photographic images have a sense of distance to them. I think they lack the sharpness of contemporary photography we see in newspapers and magazines. They somehow feel closer to a painting. So, yeah, apparently she does use some found imagery.
Stunning work.
Yeah, absolutely really, really beautiful.
I mean, beautiful blend of the technical and the aesthetic and the emotional to create. I mean, this looks like stuff like, you know, games that I've played. And I want to walk through these worlds.
It feels very
worlds.
Much like the new PlayStation 5. You know, like that's what it feels like.
Yeah, yeah.
They feel rendered.
Yeah. Darkest days. Yeah. Play it now on PlayStation 5.
So, I like bringing in every once in a while you could say, yes, she's a photographer in that she uses a camera to create her work in multiple levels. She is not a traditional photographer in the sense that she just takes a picture of what's in front of her. So, photography
but
is an element
much
of what she's
artist.
Doing, much the same way as Richard Tushman, right? Like it's where he's building stuff, she's building stuff, and then they're photographing the result. I mean, it's the same way you talk about Vic Muniz. Vic Muniz is, he would probably say he's a photographer, even though he's, you know, photography is just an element of what he's trying to do. So anyway, just thought she'd be really fun. Go check out Suzanne Moxay.
Good one. I was excited to see this because, like I said, it came up. I think it was in Flipboard, I don't know, a week or so ago, and so I'm glad you put it in here.
So we'll need questions for the Q&A that'll be up in a couple weeks. So send in your questions. Yeah, it'll be 2 weeks. Right?
Yeah.
But send in your questions now because we're gonna have to record a little bit early. Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. We'll set up a little post in the group so people can add questions or tweet at Jeffrey or I, Bill Wadman, Jeffrey Storis, Wadman365 on Instagram. And so just a reminder, I will be in San Francisco in 2 weeks. So if you want to get together and have a little meal on the 18th for dinner, let me know. Got anything else? 347-687-9411. Just reminding Tom in Michigan, so when he calls.
A couple people, actually, one more thing. A couple people said it sounded like you were having a conversation
with yourself
after the show.
Yeah, I must have left it at the end, but I didn't have time to...
You left it at the... But you didn't include my side, so it just sounded like you were talking to yourself.
I accidentally did that. I was in a rush last week. Sorry, everyone.
Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm schizophrenic, and so am I. It's one of those.
Actually, Jeffrey wasn't on the horn. I was just talking to myself.
Yeah, he was just talking. He was wishing that he was still talking to me. All right, kids. Thanks for listening.
See you soon.
Yep. Questions. Don't forget. Send them in. Join the group. If you haven't joined the group, the link will be in the show notes. If it's not, it's bit.ly/capital-O/group. OTP.
Wow, very complicated what you just said there. I got lost in that stew of letters.
Or you could just use Google.
Yeah, you could just do that.
or duck duck
be a link in the show notes.
Then they won't track you. Yeah, be like, all right, thanks for listening, everyone.
Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say. Say, Willie.